Hello, hello. You are listening to A Pastor in His Newspaper, a podcast hoping you read the news with the Bible in your hand. This is Dr. Kester. It's good to be with you. It's been a while. I have returned from Switzerland. What a great country. We had a lot of, me and my wife, Lisa, traveled there, had a great time, and hung out with our friends who are Swiss, who have a church there in Bern. So we enjoyed spending time with them and their children, and we traveled around the country, went to Geneva, saw the Reformation Wall, saw Pierre Chapel, where Calvin preached and really led the Reformation in Switzerland. And also, we went to the Alps, and we skied in the Alps. So it sounds so so rich and famous and luxurious, but we took a train all over the country and just got to see the beautiful Alps and saw the lakes, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful country. Really enjoyed it. And one of the things that I was actually kind of surprised, but the bus that was supposed to pick us up from this area didn't pick us up, and a Swiss citizen took us to the train station, and it was so kind. And it was just a perfect trip in a lot of ways. We didn't have any travel problems. Then we got sick, and we had great weather. And so really we couldn't have asked for a better outcome for our trip. So that was kind of like years in the making. We finally got to go. And so, yeah, thank you for those who prayed for us while we were gone, but also those who were excited to see our pictures. That my wife, she posted a lot of photos of our different journeys. And so I'm back and got through Easter. Easter is always a busy week when you work at a church. And so I'm on the other side of Easter, and then went and saw the solar eclipse, which was really cool. I was kind of like, this is a waste of time. We're going to drive, 2 hours to go see something for 2 seconds and then drive all the way back. But I was a believer. I thought it was very much worth it. We went to an area of Arkansas where we saw the totality of the eclipse, and so we got to take the glasses off and see the black moon over the sun, and see the drastic change in light and weather. It got cooler for a moment, so that was pretty cool. I actually saw a video that Elon Musk posted of like what it looked like from space, like from the shuttle. I guess the SpaceX shuttle was kind of near it, and you just saw this black hole kind of over the area that that it was at that moment. So that was actually pretty weird and cool too. So I'm glad we did that, and we made it back and didn't get into any traffic. I know there were some people who went to Arkansas from Memphis who it took them a long time to get back. So we didn't have to worry about that. We got back to Memphis, and so that was a great little day trip that we took. And I feel bad for the kids who didn't get the day off. Guyerville, in our town, they gave the kids the day off, so we got to really take our three oldest kids to take a part in that. I think the next solar eclipse in the United States is in 20 years. So I guess 2045, I guess, is when it is, or something like that. But it's in the northern part of the continent of USA. So like North Dakota, Montana. So if you didn't see it, you're going to have to travel much further if you live in this part in the southeastern region, mid-south region of the United States. So I'm going to talk about, I probably should talk about this for just a moment just to kind of catch you up. But as a Tennessee fan, I was, Tennessee's never made the Final Four. I was pretty eager that this would be the year, and they got all the way to the Elite Eight, and then in my mind, got a little robbed. The foul calling was kind of one-sided if you watch the Tennessee-Purdue basketball game. But Purdue had the best player in the country. Zach Edey is a monster. And even though Dalton Connect scored, I think he was scored over 30 points, we just weren't able to really shoot enough free throws to win the game. Pretty much what ended up deciding the game. So unfortunate. It's kind of frustrating when you've never made the Final Four, you lose in the Elite Eight, and Alabama, who's never made the Final Four until this year, makes the Final Four. And Tennessee was a lot better this year than Alabama, and also a lot better than NC State. And so, but hey, that's the tournament. You know, if Tennessee would have done their taking care of business in the SEC tournament, they probably wouldn't have been in Purdue's bracket. They probably would have been in the North Carolina bracket, probably would have been the number one seed in that bracket, and they probably would have made it to the Final Four. They probably would have had to play UConn potentially in the Final Four or semifinals, but they probably would have made it. Because they actually had a pretty tough draw, and they played, they played the 15th seed, but then they ended up playing Texas, which was the 7th seed, and then they had to play Creighton, who was a good 3 seed, who actually beat UConn. They were the last team to beat UConn, and they won by 30-plus points. So they had a pretty tough draw, and they got to that Elite Eight game against a really good Purdue team, and Purdue was in the top 1, 2, 3 all year round. They had the best player in the country, 2-time Naismith Player of the Year, and Zach Eadie. So, I mean, Tennessee, in some ways, I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot when they just kind of didn't play well at the end of the season, lost 2 games in a row, and that kind of did them in. So, unfortunate. And they had just beaten Mississippi State and not gotten pretty much handled by Mississippi State. They probably would have been a 1 seed, and they may have made the Final Four. So, but that's how things go. But we're going to talk about a topic today that was in The Economist. It's an interesting topic that I kind of haven't really thought about. It didn't surprise me as I read it, but as they were looking at just kind of where we are in different diverging worldviews, not just geographically, that's kind of been consistent for a long time, where the southern region of the United States is more conservative than the northern region and the western region, but even in the kind of the Great Plains and the southwest region is more conservative than other parts, especially the Great Lakes or the Pacific Northwest of the United States. But what they looked at in this article was actually the diverging worldviews between sexes, and so they're noticing that young men and women have different political views. And that's uncommon because, like, in the late 90s in particular, that there wasn't a major difference between the younger generation, which women and men, when it came to their political views. But now things are starting to change a bit. And so they're noticing that women, younger women, and this is not just true in the United States, it's also true in Europe, and it's probably more true in Europe than actually is in the United States, is that young women are becoming far more liberal, so they're moving further left, where young men are moving further right. And that's actually one of the reasons why, especially in Europe, you're seeing some of these kind of like far right candidates and parties do well in European elections, because they are, a lot of the young European men are just more conservative than actually young men were, 15, 20 years ago. And so this has been an interesting trend that has the people are trying to track and see this pattern. So men, and this was actually, they kind of profiled Poland and looked at Poland in particular, but in last year's election in Poland, the top choice for 18 to 29-year-old men was a confederation, a party that touts free market economics and traditional social values. They are against feminism, and this is one of the slogans of the party. 26% of young men backed that party. Only 6% of young women, backed the Confederate Party in Poland. So this is a growing trend, and they polled 20 rich countries, in Europe, and saw that, and they also did this in America and in Korea. And they're noticing in all three of these areas of the world, which are more obviously Western and these governments they have liberal democracies. And they're noticing this trend of young women are moving further left and men are moving further right. And so they have unshared values. As we look at some of these regions, it's obviously we see a wider separation between young men and young women in the United States compared to France or Italy or Britain or in South Korea. So the U.S., it's actually this trend is the gap is further than it is in other parts of the world. And there's this massive gulf of political opinion between younger women and young men. So women are becoming far more liberal, where men are becoming far more conservative. And you wonder, like, why is that? And I think one of the comments or opinions or the way that people are kind of trying to explain this phenomenon is that young women, now that we are, you know, feminism has succeeded in some of their goals, right? Women have far more opportunities in the workplace and public life. But they're still concerned. Women are still concerned with injustices that are in the world. I mean, we think about all the different issues that people are labeling as issues of injustice. Women are far more, you know, they're continuing in that movement now that, you know, they've received more opportunities. And so they've moved on from feminism movements and moved on to other issues that they see are unjust. And so they're continuing. And typically in Western countries, the liberal parties are the ones that champion those issues. Well, men are seeing that in some ways that things have gone too far with women's rights, and that we're going beyond where we need to go. And so therefore there's like kind of a needing to counterbalance that push of more, you know, more freedoms and more opportunities for women, and that we need to move in another direction, and we actually need to move in a more traditional way. And so this is the trends that we're seeing. So let's look at some of the kind of this election data just to kind of show you. In the United States in particular, 72% of young American women voted in the last midterm election, which is 2022. They voted for a Democrat in the House election. 72% of young women. Now, young men, only 54% voted for a Democratic candidate in the 2022 election. And again, like, you're like, okay, well, what's so significant about that? Well, in the 2008 election, that gap wasn't that significant. Young men and young women would predominantly vote for a Democratic candidate, or more women would vote for, maybe more of the percentage would vote for a Republican candidate. But now the gap has grown quite wide. And so what's happening here is that now that young men and young women are not more aligned on issues and values, when it gets into the idea of dating and the idea of marriage, women are not wanting to marry men that are more conservative than they are, or not as liberal as they are. And so there's this great division. Interesting enough is, I think what you're noticing, especially amongst men, is there's a desire that men would, it's almost like we've gone so far in this trajectory of progressivism and where feminism has taken us, that now men are kind of reacting back. As more women are in the workplace, there's less job opportunities that would have been open to men 20, 30 years ago. And now that they're competing against women for jobs they didn't have to, that men didn't have to compete with, you know, in the years past, they are reacting, you know, that we need to kind of move to, we need to move in a more traditional, back to a more traditional structure and system where less women are working and more women are focused on the home and less in their careers. And so you've actually over the last several years, it's interesting what you see in the West, especially in the United States is, and I experienced this when I worked on a college campus, that you just see far more women getting college degrees. And so with that, women are more qualified for a lot of positions and jobs. And in some of the kind of vocational systems, you see the health industry has really grown over the last several years. Well, women are more prone to seek health related positions and jobs, right? There's less men that are nurses. There's less men that are and other roles within the hospital system or the health system, but those are great opportunities for women. And so the opportunities for men are kind of shrinking, especially in a world that's becoming far more technologically advanced, less manufacturing job in the West as manufacturing jobs move to developing nations. Now more positions are service related positions or health related positions or again, technology related positions, which require college degrees to be able to get those jobs. And with more women in college getting degrees, that means they're more qualified to get the jobs that are now open. And now men are kind of reacting to the scarcity of positions and opportunities. And so you see this kind of grievances amongst young men. And so they're kind of pushing back. And so you see kind of, you see again, like you have less men in college, more women in college, and there's no shared values. And so women aren't attracted to these men who don't have college degrees or do not have, high paying jobs. And so they're not attracted to them. They don't share the same values. They don't share the same political values. And so therefore they don't want to pursue them in dating. They don't want to pursue them in marriage, which creates more frustration for young men as they desire to be married, a desire to kind of be in a more traditional family system. But they're not finding, again, a spouse that would fit that role. And so that's kind of created this wide gap. They're continuing to pull away from one another of not sharing the same values, which again wasn't true in years past. Even if you go back to really 2002, if you look at kind of the political spectrum, there wasn't really much of a difference between political views of young men and young women, right? Typically 18 to 29 year olds at that time, 2002, would have been probably more, they would have leaned liberal or leaned to vote for Democrats, but it wouldn't be as high as where women are currently. But it would probably be a little bit higher where men are currently. And so there's this, the men have kind of moved again further to kind of be more conservative as they react against what's going on in the culture, and women continue to move further to the left. And you kind of see that if you're, paying attention to, again, college campuses and areas where there's men and women who are gathering, you see a lot more women involved in like Black Lives Matter or other type of racial injustice movements. You see women more involved in like climate change and environmental movements. You see more women involved in a lot of other kind of more liberal leaning movements. You see more women involved in these particular movements, where you see more men involved in more right-leaning movements or far-right movements. You just see more men. So you see this kind of division. And therefore you're like, okay, they're young, but they obviously do not share the same values. How could they possibly be attracted to each other or be in a healthy relationship with one another? So really, you know, as governments think about this or as cultures think about this, how, because again, one of the consequences, and this was written, you know, years and years ago as they were studying China. And one of the issues that happened in China, obviously, was the one child policy, where they were promoting families having males and not females. And so you had a society that had far more young men than young women. And so therefore, you had this issue of men who desire to be married, especially in a culture where families are so important, and to be viewed as honorable as a man who's married and has a family. Well, if you can't find a wife because there's not enough women to marry, it creates an issue for that man. And so it ended up, they noticed that there was more crime because, and you see this actually all over the world. You see a lot of young men who are not married, don't have jobs, and have a tendency to fall into crime. And so this is an issue that has to be fixed. And as we think about how to, number one, if one of the issues is, again, less young men pursuing college degrees. This has been, again, a trend over the last several years where women have outpassed men when it comes to college degrees or even postgraduate degrees. And again, men are not being qualified for kind of 21st century employment. And so looking at different ways of educating men are different than women. And then I think that's one of the problems, even in society, is that kind of your typical like public school system, it tends to favor teaching females than does males. It kind of sits, you know, boys in these classrooms for long periods of time, and they don't have a lot of opportunity for play. And men just learned, or boys just learn differently than women. Boys do well with problem solving and putting them outside and doing activities. And so finding other ways to train men, I think is really important and very key, so that they're more qualified for the jobs that are available nowadays. And that's one thing that is important for governments to think through as they notice this issue of men maybe being unemployed, or a growing trend of young men being unemployed and not qualified for jobs. Other things that we want to just look at here as we talk about this issue of again, men becoming more conservative and women becoming more liberal, and then creating an issue where they just are not they don't share values, and so they're not attracted to one another, is I think one of the things that political parties, governments can think through is that, yes, you know, there are issues with, you know, we're now in this kind of world where, you know, we are more sensitive to, you know, violence on women, which is a good thing. I mean, you know, to be in a culture that looks the other way on violence towards women is horrible and should not be allowed. And I think that especially when you think about the separation between conservatives and liberals, that liberals typically, or liberal parties typically, favor women's issues and women's problems, and tend to overlook problems that the male gender deals with. And I think there's a tendency to kind of be obsessive with the toxic masculinity. And so almost like making men feel that being a man is horrible and wrong. And I think it feeds into this, to where we are, is, and why men are tend to be more prone to be more conservative than women is that they just see that, oh, being a man is that's like you know, that's not a something you should want to be. And they're almost, it's like, there's not a definition of what a man should be in the world. SNL had a pretty funny skit not too long ago where it kind of identified this problem that, you know, men aren't really able, men aren't even able to interact with one another. And that be okay. It's, you know, all of these men, you know, gathering together. And then this is toxic. You know, these are men that are, you know, talking about, you know, women and degrading them. And so like almost not even encouraging men to spend time with one another. And, you know, the skit made this observation, and it made this joke that, you know, a girlfriend or a wife would take their husband or boyfriend to this park, and it would be like a man park and almost like a dog park. And the men would be able to talk about sports and, you know, comic books and Star Wars and these other things. And it just made this point that men, they do like want to talk with one another. They want to spend time with one another. Yes, the things that they talk about are not what women want to talk about, but it doesn't make them horrible people for wanting to talk about these things and get together and talk about these things. And just because men are, you know, because we like these things, doesn't make us horrible or horrible to women, right? And so how do political parties, you know, especially the political left, how do they talk about issues that men deal with? And again, one of the issues, as I've already talked about, is men deal with making sure that they are able to provide, they're able to work if they're single, to take care of themselves or to take care of their family, if they have a family. This is important to a man, is, again, being a provider, being one who protects. So this is how God has created men to be. Where women are created to encourage, to promote, to sustain, to build up. And you even see women in the different occupations that they tend to favor. It's, you know, health and healing and cure and you also see like education professions, again, building up, encouraging, instructing. And so women, and hence why many women, you know, decide to be, you know, mothers and not to work, because again, motherhood is about sustaining. It's about building up. It's about, helping, their children to increase in wisdom and strength and health. And it fits what God has created women to be. Where men have tended to prone to big professions of protection, providing, and guarding, you think about military, you think the police, even like the business world of building, right? Building for the sake of providing, for others, or providing protection for others, or providing things of need for others. It is not that women can't do the building or the protecting or the sustaining, and it's not that men can't build up and encourage and heal. I mean, you do see this, but generally and kind of normally, these are kind of where men and where women tend to pick professions and how they use their giftings to do these particular things. And so I think for political parties, if they want to, you know, see more men, especially young men, vote for them, they have to kind of speak to some of their issues and problems that they're dealing with. And typically, the political left in particular are only really speaking to women's issues and championing women's issues. And hence why women tend to far more favor those parties over men. And I think you also see kind of in our world and culture, you see the political left, especially being a part of the movement of really kind of presenting a world where men are the bad guys. And so in every situation, a woman is a victim and the man is the oppressor. And so in the TikTok social media world, men tend to see more often that a man has been, is a monster, and is not safe. And women are victims, and they're unsafe, and they're unsafe because men are wanting to harm them, right? And so they see this, and men are like, you know, reacting to kind of this cancel culture that they see, that to be a man is in some ways to be toxic. And so there's a reaction against that. I guess I think internally is like, whoa, like I haven't done anything wrong. I've never touched a woman in that way. I've never forced myself on a woman in that way. I feel like men are being generalized, and I think you see a reaction. And so if the political left in particular are promoting that side alone, men then react against it, right? And so I think that's kind of the culture, and I think that's where we're seeing a lot, again, more young women moving further to the left as they hear another story of a Me Too type story, and then men hearing another story of a man being improperly accused and improperly canceled. And so they react a different direction, and so they move further apart from one another. And so I think that's kind of where we are. And I think, while I do think that there are, obviously there are men that are just as liberal as women are, and there are women that are just as conservative as men are. And they typically will then, find each other. But there are less young women that are as conservative, and there are less men that are as liberal. And so there is this gap, and there's an unshared value that has led to kind of a pretty toxic culture of a diverging positions on many issues. It creates another topic just to kind of talk about in this vein is really men and women, really in the church in particular, or in the home especially. And Christian Today had an extensive article on this, on men and women's roles in the church and in the home. And it is an interesting and important issue. We have kind of come a long way, I think, especially in the church, in regards to the roles of women in the church. And of course, we've gone too far. And I would say even just recently with Saddleback Church being removed from the SBC because they ordained a woman to be a pastor, and they were, they went against the Baptist Faith and Message 2000, and so they were removed. This was obviously Rick Warren's church that he started, and he no longer is the lead pastor, but obviously is very much influential in that church system. So I think one of the things that, Christians and especially churches have to think through this, and, there's a question, and actually this question I think is an important question to ask as we think through, again, like what are... And I think that's what you actually see. Even when we talk about the political widening between young men and young women, but I think what you also see is in this, in the church, where you may see, because of what's going on in the culture, men reacting against women's roles in the church. And so in some ways, because the culture is one way, the church should be so different, like light and day, so that women really don't have much of a role in the church. That's kind of a reaction because the culture is the way. And I've heard people like, on the side of caution, we're going to be this way because the culture is one way. And I understand where they're coming from. I think the problem though is there's some important constants we have to keep in mind. And this is actually in the Danvers Statement on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. This was signed in a meeting in Danvers, Massachusetts in 1998. This is the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, and this was signed by prominent evangelical leaders of the time, like Dr. Moeller, Lincoln Duncan. Of course, C.J. Mahaney is kind of, even though he's still pastoring at Sovereign Grace, you have Wayne Grudem, you have Bruce Ware at Southern Seminary. You have J.I. Packer was a part of this council. Danny Aiken, who is the president of Southeastern Seminary. There are a few women on this council as well. Susan Hunt, She's a consultant to Presbyterian Church in America's Women in the Church Ministry. Rebecca Jones, who is an author, a Christian author in California. And Mary Farver, who is an author and speaker in Texas. And there are one or two more women on this council as well, and also on the board of references. And so this was a group in 1998. They kind of submitted this statement on biblical manhood and womanhood. And I agree with everything on this statement. You can find this online if you would like to read it. I'll probably post this on the description of this podcast episode, so you can just click on it. But you know, one of the things that the affirmations that come from Scripture is that both Adam and Eve were created in God's image, equal before God as persons and distinct in their manhood and womanhood. Okay, it's important that the equality between men and women, both created by God, God views them and value equally. They have the same essence. They're both image bearers of God. This is really important and clear. And so God has saved men and women through his son, Jesus Christ. He's given them his Holy Spirit. He has given men and women spiritual gifts. They are important to the church. Both genders are important to the church. Men are not more important to the church than women. Women are not less important to the church as men. They're both important to the church and building up the church to spiritual maturity that we see in Ephesians chapter 4. And so this is really important place to start. But I think you have to also remember that there is distinctions in masculine and feminine roles as ordained by God as part of the created order and should find an echo in every human heart. Again, we see in Genesis chapter 2 that Eve was created by God for Adam to be his helper. And I think the problem with, and I remember talking about this in a class, is people didn't like that word helper. But God is ascribed the word helper. He is the helper of Israel, right? He helped Israel. He rescued Israel. There's nothing wrong with the word helper. Helper is not a word of you're not low because you're a helper. You're a helper. Like, you're someone who is an instrument of good. You provide something that is lacking, and so therefore you help. Adam was lacking. God said it was not good that man should be alone. So he did what? He created Eve from the rib of Adam, and this was good. This was very good. And they were one flesh, it says in Genesis chapter 2. This was very good. And so this is really important that we understand this, that yes, there are different roles between men and women, but those roles are given by God and those roles are important. They're very significant. Now, when we get to the church, there are roles within the church that, well, I would say there's one role that women are not affirmed by God to possess, which is an elder of the church. And primarily when we think of an elder, one of the major activities of an elder is preaching. And so if I were to walk in a church and I were to hear someone preaching, my normal kind of conclusion is that is an elder of the church. Okay. That is really important. And so again, Paul says in 1 Timothy, I do not permit a woman to have authority over men. And one of the things that God gives the church is elders who have authority in the church. And so this is really important. Women are still helpers. Women still serve in the church. Women can still teach in the church. Women can still lead in the church. They can still administrate in the church. They can still provide wisdom to the church, in the church. But they cannot fulfill the role of elder. And one of the primary roles of an elder is a teacher, and a teacher over the church. So this is important language that you have to, like, you can't fall into the trap of saying, well, helper is a bad word. To be a helper is to be lowly. To be a helper is the one who is not as smart. I mean, there are plenty of men who are wise men who will say without a shadow of a doubt that their wives know more than them on many, many different topics. Maybe even the Bible. Okay. that is not something that is sinful. It's not something that's evil that a woman would know more about the Bible than a man or her husband. It's, you know, it's not a horrible thing for a woman to be reading her Bible and reading a theology book. There's nothing biblically wrong with that at all. And so one of the questions that I, as we think about this is our church truly committed to including women in the life of the church and creating pathways for them to exercise the full extent of their gifts? Well, while I wanted to bring in the kind of what's going on in the culture, typically what's happening though is that what's going on in the culture, we see churches or especially men saying, okay, women, look what women are doing in the culture, right? They are, they're speaking with far too much authority. They have far too much, power. Feminism has gone awry. There's no difference between men and women. There's even people saying that men are toxic. That men are bad. So we're going to react against that and say, really, women can't do much at all in the church. Well, that's going too far. And again, I would say if you're a church and you're not discipling women to be to use their giftings to build up the church, then I believe you've gone too far. Women should be taught. They should be trained for ministry. They should be allowed to do ministry in the church. They should be allowed to be on. If you have a finance committee, if you have a pastor selection committee, women most definitely could be on that committee. They could definitely be a part of that administration. There's nothing scripturally wrong with women being a part of that. So, and there's other ways that you can have women involved in the ministry of the church where you're not breaking a clear ordination by God, which is women are not permitted to be elders. They're not permitted to preach over the church. But one of the things, if you have a leadership training ministry at your church, if you teach some biblical classes or theology classes, invite women to be a part of that. Right? There's nothing wrong with women being a part. If you have a hermeneutics class where you're teaching men and women how to interpret scripture, have women be a part of that. It's really important because even with the idea of teaching, there are going to be areas that are very appropriate for women to teach. And it's important if they are going to teach that they know what they're talking about and they teach sound doctrine. We don't want women teaching bad doctrine. We want them teaching sound doctrine, but we also want them teaching in the proper biblical context that God has ordained. And one of those areas is women teaching women, right? Or what we'll also notice is that women do a lot of teaching in their home, right? They teach their children the ways of the Lord. This is really important. We want our women to be good teachers of their children. I mean, if you have a children's ministry and all the main teachers are men, even if you have that, still, most of that biblical teaching of those children are going to be done in the home. And potentially, depending on what the husband does, maybe mostly by the wife. So therefore, it's really important that the church instruct and build up those women to be able to teach sound doctrine, to teach scripture properly. That is a good, godly thing. And it also is promoting women exercising their full extent of their gifts. And this is really important and this is really good. And I think we as men, we don't need to react with what the culture is going and go too far the other direction, where we actually in some ways, maybe not intentionally, but we're actually pushing down our women in our church and we're putting them at a level that the Bible does not permit, nor does it, is it a promoting or encouraging. Again, the Bible is pretty clear on what women are not permitted to do. But there's far more things that they're able to do. And this is important and good. Now, again, your church, you make those decisions on what those things are. I mean, if the elder board of the church decides that it is best that women do not pray on stage, that is, again, I'm going to kind of lean on, again, Matthew 16 to Matthew 18, that as the church gathers together, whatever decisions they make, God, will whatever you loose in earth, he will loose in heaven. Whatever, you know, this, whatever you bound on earth, he will bound in heaven. Like this, God does give the church authority to make these decisions. I just don't think you have to make that decision from a scriptural standpoint. I think there is some nuance to the idea of women, you know, speaking, you know, on stage at the church, either through reading scripture or praying, or even leading worship. There are some nuance to that. I don't really come down on like, you have to do this and you have to do that. But I think this is where the church needs to make those decisions as a church. And in some churches have women deacons, some churches do not have women deacons, you know, and again, I'm going to kind of lean on your decision as a church to make those decisions. But again, we can't react to what's going on in the culture by going so far and pushing women down further than what God has ordained. And I think you see that going on really kind of in the culture is just a reaction. And sometimes that reaction is probably proper and good, right? And I think you are seeing that amongst men where they're reacting against this kind of generalization that men are toxic, right? That men have nothing, they have very, very, what they do as men is harmful, it's not good. That's just not true. Men have a tendency to be overly violent. They have a tendency to, this has been true over most of the 20th century in particular, is they have a tendency to overindulge, right? They have a tendency to mistreat women like this. This does happen. But it's not something that every man, is currently doing or will do. And there are men that gather together to do really, really productive and good things for women, you know? We're raising future men, and it's important that we raise them to be men. And again, men were created by God to provide, to protect, to lead, to shepherd. This is what they were created to do. And so this is important characteristics that we want to install in our boys. But they do it in a gentle way. They do it in a kind, loving way. They do it in a way that doesn't harm unless they are forced to do so for the sake of protecting. But, you know, in women, and we have young girls, we want to raise future women who are sustainers, who are encouragers, who are those who build up, those who heal, those who cure, those who provide healing and those type of activities and actions. So these are good things. We have to think through this topic of what is a man and what is a woman. They are different. They are not the same. They are different. Men don't need to become more like women, and women do not need to become more like men. They do need to be different as God has created them to be, but they are equal and they are important, and they do need each other. We need each other. I need my wife. I need her help. She needs my help. The issues with marriages is you have just where you have men who they think that their only role is to go work and then just come home. And it's the wife's job to do all the other things. Or there's a view where it's, you know, the man and the woman, they just go off and work, right? And they really, there's no kind of clear division on who, you know, what is a man and what is a woman in the home. And so I think we live in a culture where that's a difficult discussion on what is in your home, how do you identify the godly roles of a husband or a man and the godly roles of a wife and a woman? I think it's a little bit more difficult in our culture, but I think it's something we have to consider and think through. You know, it's probably proper for men, you know, to, you know, hold the door open for your wife. I think it's proper, to be the one who maybe potentially disciplines your children. There are other ways that you can think through these issues where men are clearly honored by their wife and the husband clearly serves and puts her needs before her own. This is important conversations as you deal, you figure out what the different roles are. I think it, again, is harder in our culture to do this because, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, they were far more clear. There was less, intermingling of roles, but it's changed. There's more women working. There's even more men that are helping with household chores, which is, I think, is a good thing. I think when husbands and wife are coming together to run the home, I think that is a good positive thing, because I think they're helping one another, they're working together, they're communicating with one another, they see each other as a team, as one. That this is not her home that I pay for, but that is our home, right? And it's our dishes, it's our table, it's our yard, it's the thing that we share, and now we're going to divide delegate the activities, but it is something that we are doing together, and it's something we're proud of together. And I think that is really good language and really important as we think through this. But I think even in the church, as we think through this, again, it is our church. It's not the pastor's church. It's not the elder's church. It's our church. It's a church of one body of many members, and some of those members are men, and some of those members are women, right? And God has gifted the men and the women differently, and they are to help one another to promote sound doctrine, to disciple, to evangelize their community, to bring the gospel to the nations, to support missions. To raise contributions for the sake of the church's ministry, but also for the benevolence and the needs of those who are hurting, who have needs. They are to do this together. And so again, this, you're one body. You're not just the male body and then the females kind of are tagged along. You are one body. And we have to use scripture to help us understand and how to delegate authority and then be faithful to the New Testament on how the church is to operate. So a lot going on this issue of men and women, in particular in our culture. And I would say, you know, women really help promote biblical manhood, right? Don't fall in the trap of defining what a man is from culture. Men promote biblical womanhood. Do not promote what is the culture, right? And I think, again, a part of what it means to be a biblical woman is to be, that modesty is a big part of that. And so husbands or men, do not push your wife to do things that they're not comfortable to do when it comes to dress, right? In particular, women, like, listen to your husbands in regards to modesty. If he doesn't feel comfortable with you wearing that and promoting your body in a certain way, again, you. This is important as you represent God together, and so again, we want to use the Bible as the one that influences who we are as men and women, not the culture, right? And as we think about our young boys and our young girls, how do we educate our young boys and our young girls? How do we help them succeed well? How do we help them to identify their giftings and their callings so then for the glory of the Lord? We don't want idleness. Men who are idle or boys that are idle is not good for them. They're not meant to be idle. They're meant to work. They're meant to provide. They're meant to contribute. And so we need to help them to learn in ways that they are wired to learn so that they can then contribute and be productive partners of our families and citizens of our communities as well. So hopefully this has been helpful and instructive. I'm hoping to do another episode next week and kind of get on pace. I know I've gotten behind. As we've gotten into the 2024 election, we'll probably have some more of those. Again, if you have topics you'd like for me to discuss, please send those to me. You can send me an email at mcastro@centralchurch.com. Please do that. Would love to hit on an issue that you're interested in. I would love to prioritize that. So help me out with that. And have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your week. And hopefully we'll be back next year with a pastor in his newspaper. Please continue to read the news with the Bible in your hand, and we'll see you next week.